Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin, and helping you maneuver through this waning dystopia. It's episode number 481 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up at this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag provides a Deshaun Watson update. At 12:30, the Mavs get their butts kicked in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. And in mere minutes, Jimbo and Nick Saban are going at it over NIL. I'm Trey Elling. Behind the glass today is a guy who can talk hoops, sports, music, and a whole lot more. He pushes his pee all over B&E every morning, and he helps make this show better a few times per week. It is Isaiah Collier. What's up, Zay? How you doing today?
Doing pretty great, Trey. Might have to change the name to this show on Thursday and Fridays to Shirts and Skins After Dark.
I like it. And sitting across from me is the Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie. You may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
You damn right. Hope everybody's having a good Thursday. It already had a little bit in it, and then a couple of big-name college football coaches put a little more in this show. So we'll get into all of that. And yes, the Dallas Mavericks started the Western Conference Finals with a dud. They've started the last couple series that way. So if you're a Mavs fan, I guess that's the confidence you try to build. This is what they do. They lull you into complacency, and then they attack later on. 112-87 was the final score there, and we will talk about that throughout the show today. But Golden State, definitely the better team in Game 1. Coming up at 105, we'll have our normal conversation with Paul Wadlington, Scipio Tex of Inside Texas and On3.com. I'm sure he'll have a thought or two on Nick Saban and Jimbo, but we'll also ask him about some of these new rules coming in. The NCAA committee has laid those two new rules out we were talking about, and that'll get lost today, but we'll make sure to talk about it in addition to the Saban and Jimbo saga. Also on a local front at 2 o'clock, we're going to have a couple folks from the Chronicle show up and tell us about the best of winners, because it's out there. If you go to AustinChronicle.com, Trey, they can find the best of so many different things. It's a cool way to go about it if you're looking for that next awesome meal you didn't know about. It's there, but you can also look up music, nightclubs, places to take kids, places to do whatever, you know, businesses. There's so many things in the best of list that is out today.
And our friend Sarah, who will be in studio, was nominated for, I forget what the award was. Wow, excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm getting choked up talking about this. Either that or it's a potato chip. And so she was, her company, Lucky Dog Tarot, was nominated for...
It was like Service of the Year?
Best Service.
Something
yeah,
like that,
I think
yeah.
It's something like that. She did not win.
No.
But she's a good enough sport that she's still going to show up and talk about things.
She has agreed to show up and badmouth whoever did win. No, that's not true. That's not
yeah.
true. She'll try to be as nice as she can. So all that is coming up, but we will definitely make sure to get as much in as we can today. But, of course, we will have to talk about some soap opera, college football-wise. We've been having this discussion for a while now. Last night, something happened, and then today, something else happened. Let's get in with the Spec Set Piece and talk college football.
The Spec Set Piece is brought to you by Specs Wine, Spirits, and Finer Foods. Cheer on Verde with Specs' larger selection of world-class wines, spirited spirits, and craft beers. Score more at Specs, official partner of Austin FC.
Trey, it is pretty clear when you talk about college football nowadays that when it comes to finishing things, Nick Saban can usually do it. His teams can certainly do it. But in the last year or so, he's also been pretty good at starting stuff. And last night, he really decided he was going to start something.
Yeah.
So, Zay, do we have the Nick Saban lighting of this fire before we get to the Jimbo fire? Last night in Birmingham, I believe it was, Saban was doing what Jimbo and Sark and a lot of coaches are doing now, which is going around talking to the boosters and talking to the support folks. And I'm not sure if he was asked a question about recruiting or if he wanted to bring it up, but he referenced the A&M recruiting class as it compared to Bama, and here's what he said.
And you've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. right? But I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
Was he talking to the guy handing out mints in the bathroom at a hotel? Is that recording?
Apparently that was from across the room. Yeah, that was from way across the room.
Okay.
Because this wasn't set up. If you saw the video, it was like Saban and a couple guys sitting in chairs up on a stage. Like, it really wasn't set up, I think, to be, you know, recorded or whatever. But I guess, you know, everybody's going to be – the media will show up and run on it, I guess, as much as they can.
Right.
So – I don't know what I enjoyed more, the sound of the murmur when he said A&M bought every player, or the sound of the murmur when he said they didn't buy one player. Like, there was shuffling in seats for both of those moments. Did he really just say? Is he really? And both of those were really emphatic. I always talk about, be careful when you're emphatic. You don't need to be emphatic all the time. Trey, he was emphatic hard both ways.
Yes, he was.
And I don't know why. I keep asking the questions of why. There is something going on that Saban's upset about, and he really decided it was time to specifically go after. Now, he and Lane Kiffin had made snarky comments around signing day.
Right.
And that's why Jimbo went off on the 8-minute rant. By the way, the response you're going to hear from Jimbo does not last 8 minutes. Thank God. I think it's only three. Thanks to Zay for doing some editing, so it won't be long. But it was not 8 minutes. He talked about 3 minutes, and we'll play that for you in a second.
I mean, the bottom line is Nick Saban is ticked off that he didn't get the number one recruiting class because A&M figured out a way to pay these guys to make their home in College Station.
And
period.
And could it be a way, before we get into the other side of it, could it be a way that is so drastically different than the way he's doing it? Is that possible?
Oh, he's being extremely petty here. Like, he's asking, and Jimbo gets into this in his answer, he's asking for some things to be uncovered about Nick Saban and the way that he's run that program over the last decade plus now. Because Nick Saban is certainly not so pure that he should feel comfortable casting stones in this world.
I wouldn't think so.
I mean, come on.
To me,
he has already talked about how his team reaped the benefits of NIL more than any other team in the country last year.
Well, the reason I mentioned him being able to start stuff in the last year or so, he was the guy who mentioned Bryce Young's value.
Yeah, he did. You're right.
That was Saban who said, my quarterback's almost a millionaire and he hadn't even played. That was you, Nick.
Yep.
I didn't say that. Jimbo didn't say that. That wasn't Dabo. You said that. So that's Nick Saban last night. Well, this morning after the school and Jimbo and A&M didn't really comment, they were gathering their thoughts. Jimbo Fisher calls a press conference at 10 o'clock in the morning, and without being asked a question, this is what Jimbo Fisher had to say. Here we go.
First of all, I'll say it's a shame that we have to do this. It's really despicable. It's despicable that somebody can say things about somebody and an organization. More importantly, 17-year-old kids. You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families. That they broke state laws. They're all money. We bought every player on this group. We never bought anybody. No rules were broken. Nothing was done wrong. It was all in the way we do things, the ethics in which we do things. And these families, it's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. And it's ridiculous. But when he's not on top, and the parody in college football he's been talking about, go talk to coaches who coach for him. You'll find out all the parody. Go dig into wherever he's been. You can find out anything. And it's a shame that you got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families in Texas A&M because we do things right. We're always going to do things right. But we're always going to be here. We're doing a heck of a job. These coaches have done a great job. Our players have done a great job. The whole organization of recruiting people. It's despicable that we got to sit here at this level of ball and say these things to defend the people of this organization, the kids, 17-year-old kids, and their families. It's amazing. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know. We built him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. And it's despicable. It really is. And it's a shame we have to sit up here and have this conversation about things we do. And it's personal to us. Yes, it is. It's personal to A&M. It's personal to our players. It's personal to our coaches and everybody involved. And I know the guy. Know him really well. It's amazing that we're allowed to do those things. It's really despicable. And I hate it. For our players who are coming here, who did things the right way, have done things the right way, and will continue to do things the right way, I apologize to you that people insult you publicly the way they're doing it. And our fans, I apologize to you guys for people saying those things about Texas A&M. But promise you this, there are no violations. There are nothing wrong. It's the second time we've had to do this with grown men who don't get their way and want to pout, throw a fit, and act up. Just go ask all the people who work for him. You'll know exactly what he's about. I always said this. My dad always told me this. When people show you who they are, believe them. He's showing you who he is.
Questions?
That's well done at the end.
Oh,
and questions.
Jeez.
I've got a 6 on the despicable count. Craig Way had the guess at 5 earlier. I think that last one makes it 6, but he did get into the word despicable. Ask God, dig into how God does his deal. that is just a great sentence all by itself. Trey, have you ever seen the movie Malice with Alec Baldwin and what's her name? Nicole Kidman?
No.
There's a great line in there where she says, ask God how many drinks he had before he cut me open. That's what it reminded me of. Go find out how God does his deal. So there's Jimbo Fisher's comment today at A&M. Trey, I don't think he's getting invited out to the lake house in Georgia to hang with Nick.
Probably not. And this may in some way, shape, or form be the result of the 8-minute rant that Jimbo went on several months ago. And Nick Saban just not being able to let go of the fact that he had the number one recruiting class in the country stolen away from him. And by the way, this is more about just Texas A&M, too. Because Nick Saban lost out on, I believe, a recruit or two to the Texas Longhorns. And there were probably other programs who money-whipped a kid coming out of high school to convince him to go to wherever, not named Alabama. And I guess I understand where his frustration is coming from in one sense. In the other sense, and I know that he's kind of providing this warning to the rest of college football, like, we can play that game too. Yeah, well, you probably should have been already then, Nick. If you weren't treating it that seriously, what did you think was going to happen here? We were going to hold hands and play Ring Around the Rosie while these kids started to make money? Smart institutions were going to figure out a way to do it in a manner that may go right up to the line of breaking rules in some cases, sometimes well over the line in the case of the Miamis of the world, but it was basically going to turn into act and then ask questions later, act and take that wrist slap a little bit later. And that's where we are now. And that's why it's important to come up with some sort of protocol, the guardrails, as Bob Bowlesby put it, to rein all of this in, to not allow it to get any further out of hand. Because these kids do deserve the ability to make money, but there is a structured manner with which you can do so that was completely neglected because the NCAA dropped the ball. They put all their eggs in the basket of having the Supreme Court stopping these states from allowing kids to profit off of NIL. And once that was unanimously ruled against, the NCAA was left with its D in its hand and nothing else to do. And it's why we're about to see Mark Emmert out next summer. And it's why we're seeing a bunch of people push against the NCAA as continuing to rule over college football. Because they had their opportunity. And they have screwed up time and time again. And this is the latest and probably the largest of all the screw-ups that they have committed against this sport over the last several decades.
If you want to jump in on the discussion, the Specs text line is there for you, 337-3776. We'll point this out before we get further into it. Somebody also texted, Nick Saban also mentioned Deion Sanders by name. Yes, he did. He mentioned Jackson State, he mentioned Deion, and he accused Jackson State of paying that big-time recruit we all remember from the last recruiting class, $1 million. Deion claims that one of his sons woke him up at that point to tell him, hey, Nick Saban said this. Deion has responded on social media and will probably be responding some more, and he has basically called Nick Saban a liar.
Yeah, well, Deion better be careful there, but my problem with Nick Saban is not him calling out other programs. Well, I guess it is him calling out other programs because Nick Saban has been doing this for a long time. Where does he get the sanctimoniousness to start calling out other people just because he's a little bit butthurt that he didn't get the number one recruiting class in the country this last year? Give me a freaking break.
One of the wildest things about it is when I hear the actual words that came out of his mouth, if you didn't tell me who said it, it would sound, Trey, like it should come from
UTEP's coach, UTSA's coach, Kansas's coach, maybe Iowa, where Barta's hanging out, right? That's what I might expect. Vandy, Kentucky, someplace like that. That's Alabama's coach?
I'll give you a coach. I'll give the name of an individual who it sounds like he might say something along those lines. Like a Les Miles, maybe?
Okay.
For Nick Saban to be saying that?
It's so bizarre.
Is he starting to lose his grip on things just a little bit? I know that's a stupid question to ask, considering the successes that they just achieved once again.
Is Nick to 70 yet? I'm not sure if he's to 70.
He's not quite there. I mean,
late 60s. He's Mac Brown's age, whatever that is. Let me double check on
that. Another national championship runner-up. They just reload year after year. They continue to get top two or three recruiting classes every year.
He just turned 70 on Halloween.
Okay.
Yeah. Remember, he's a Halloween baby. Of course he is.
Yeah. There must be something else going on there that has him continuing to dwell on this.
That's what I keep asking. Why are the big dogs this upset? What is going on? But now we've gotten to a specific moment, Trey, and nobody asked the follow-up. Nobody in Birmingham that I know of asked it, and nobody in College Station asked the follow-up today. Ask these men what they mean when they say buy a kid. What did Nick mean when he said that Jimbo bought the whole class and he didn't? And then ask Jimbo, what do you mean when you say you didn't buy a kid? You know Nick well enough to know what he might be accusing you of. What's he accusing you of that you're going to tell us you didn't do? And they won't clearly state that. But we all said the same thing when Jimbo went off on the 8-minute comment, and we might say it when he went off on the 3-minute comment. Jimbo, if the players end up with money, it's allowed now. It's legal now. A lot of it's on top of the table now. So what's the accusation? And then the backside of it, Trey, would be just how comfortable is Nick Saban with the system he's got in place in Tuscaloosa? Because what he did last night tells me he is 100% certain he ain't getting caught and he ain't getting investigated and he is never going to be said to have done anything wrong. He is certain of his system after last night.
It's a gutsy move by him because there are a lot of guys who have been in and out of that program who have zero love for Nick Saban once they leave there. They're thankful for the opportunity, and perhaps that keeps certain lips sealed, but there are plenty of guys who don't want anything to do with Nick Saban anymore after spending a year or two in Tuscaloosa.
And, of course, when Jimbo says, talk to guys that have coached with him, he's one of them. And he's the guy at some point. Like, is he going to get pushed to really throw in secrets out there? But, obviously, Jimbo did learn on at least some of what he's learned from Nick Saban. Somebody texted Kiffin would say it purely to be a troll. Exactly.
Kiffin is the one guy who has battled Saban over the last few years, and it is amusing.
And when he took the shot at Jimbo on signing day and said A&M might have to pay a luxury tax for the class and everything, that's Kiffin. That felt like it was on brand for Lane Kiffin. So let us know what you think. Whoever you're a fan of, if you're an Aggie fan or a Bama fan, we definitely want to hear from you today as your two coaches are going at it and maybe ending their friendship. 337-3776 and Longhorn and Sooner fans, this is the conference you want to be in. Let us know what you think from afar watching this SEC, you know what contest.
It's a number one in contest. It's an S show too, at least in terms of the pressers happening back and forth right now. By the way, one difference between Lane Kiffin and what he said and Nick Saban is Lane Kiffin was obviously taking a shot, but he was also being humorous, too. I mean, there were people in that crowd who were laughing at that. When Nick Saban's saying that last night, he's, like, clearly upset and going off. It's just a bad look for him.
And somebody here is going with the football theory that Saban is unraveling because it's the first time assistants have beaten him last season. It happened twice. Once in College Station in a big game. Yeah. Once in the biggest game of them all when Kirby got him. So maybe he's starting to come apart a little bit. Before we hit this break, I want to get Zay's thoughts on this. Zay, you've been processing this throughout the morning on B&E, and you've heard this sound, and you've heard conversation, and you've read, you know, texts and tweets and all that stuff. And you are a Longhorn fan, so it's you know, a team that you are interested in is headed into this conference of drama. What do you make of Saban and Jimbo?
I really hate how much I love Jimbo Fisher right now. I hate it so much. I hate it so much. Because if you keep on listening to that audio, they ask him, so you and Nick, y'all are done. He was like, yeah, we're done. We're done.
End of relationship.
End of relationship.
Yeah.
Just like that. And y'all know me. I'm a petty guy. I love it. That's what college football is all about. I think Nick Saban has some nerve saying what he's saying at the college that he's at, with all of the rumors that you've heard of the money grabbing that they've been doing for the Crimson Tide for a long time. So, again, I just think he has some nerve, and I'm glad he said it because it's a juicy-ass story, and I'm all about it.
Yeah, it's like he wants me to believe it's poor old Alabama. Poor little Alabama. Again, if Kentucky's coach or, I mean, a small school, a 1AA, if North Dakota State's coach wanted to complain about the way things are, that's a different, you know, version of football. But you know what I'm saying? It would make a little more sense here. I've been asking since the moment he opened his mouth what his problem is. Is it that the assistants have started to beat him, Trey? Is it really that he didn't have the number one class? Because Kirby's beaten him out for that. Is it really that A&M did it? Or does he have a Jimbo thing? And he never thought Jimbo would have something over him. Like, what is the thing that's going on that made Nick open his mouth? I don't get it.
It's probably an easier pill for him to swallow if Georgia is doing it, because they are competing for national championships and playing in New Year's Six games with regularity.
Because he's got a football reason then.
Right.
He doesn't see Jimbo as a, or for that matter, what's going on with Jimbo, what's going on with Sark right now, if they beat him out for a recruit, he doesn't think that's because of football.
How did A&M finish last year? 8-4?
8-4.
Plus they won the bowl game?
Yeah. So 9-4, lost to the two Mississippi schools, Arkansas and one other one I can't think of right now.
So, yeah, that's not necessarily setting yourself up for the top recruiting class in the country. And that ticks him off.
Right.
Because he sees it happening on a different level now, and it's something that's going to require his attention to make sure that they're getting it right the Alabama way, to match and exceed, however, A&M, Texas, I mean, you name the school that is figuring out ways to maximize the players coming in because of NIL. Alabama hasn't done a good enough job yet, even though they've hooked the guys up on their current roster. In terms of prospective guys coming in, it's not there yet, and he's frustrated about all of that.
A lot of stuff out there. Let us know what you think. 337-3776. Saban last night, Jimbo this morning, giving us a little gift of sports talk radio to jump into. Let us know what you think about it, no matter who your team is. Up next, if your team is the Mavericks, whew, that was tough last night, I'll tell you from a personal standpoint. Mavericks lose game one. Game two of the Eastern Conference Finals is tonight, and two new rules have been laid down in college football by the NCAA. It'll get lost in this Saban-Jimbo story, but we'll make sure you know about it. Next on The Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Uh-oh. Seems like Zay might have hit a nerve with Trey. He's into this.
Not a nerve. This has a negative connotation. It's a fun song.
No, I didn't mean hit a nerve negatively. I mean,
okay.
Look, you look like you're into it.
Yeah, I like it. New Radicals.
That is not one I could have come up with.
Occasionally the game ends up on my home turf, Chad.
Yeah, it is. That
the
is
rock turf.
That is right in your wheelhouse right there. All right, so if Zay's going to start it off, sometimes he does go with that alt-rock to make Trey smile. It worked. The New Radicals. That's a catchy-ass tune right there. What's it called?
You only get what you give?
Yep, that's it.
Oh, very nice. Well done. Well done. The New Radicals getting us started. Zay is here. I'm here. I'm Chad Hastings. Trey Elling is sitting right over there. We're glad you're here. And the discussion about Saban and Jimbo will continue. By the way, clarification, we both forgot. A&M didn't have a bowl. Remember, they were going to play it, but COVID stopped it. So the Aggies did finish 8-4.
Which only further makes that point that an 8-4 football team then landed the number one recruiting class in the country.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be a little frustrating, but we've all, to the Jimbos, excuse me, to the Sabins and Dabos of the world, but we've also talked about, Trey, what is creating that. And there are two schools that took advantage in an offseason they shouldn't have been able to because of NIL, A&M and Texas,
yep,
to get top five classes. And the rest of those big dogs better just deal with it. I don't know what else to tell them. They know it's about money, and these two schools generate more of it than they do. It's just, it's part of it. It just is. So, you know, it's just going to be it's a wild discussion now, and the fact that Jimbo and Nick Saban, because of, you know, Saban starts it, Jimbo certainly finished it today. That friendship is over, apparently, and they are not going to be speaking very much moving forward, if they did at all.
Yeah, I was about to say, they weren't great friends to begin with, right?
I don't know. All I know is I think they're both from West Virginia, technically, so, but I don't know how much time they spent at Nick's Lake House or any property that Jimbo has. I really don't know.
Well, Jimbo hasn't been on his staff in a long time.
No, it's been a while. Yeah, right.
I mean, more than 15 years,
a
right?
A long time. By the time, yeah, the last time he was on any staff of his, it would have been LSU, I guess.
Mm.
Right? It would have been, he wouldn't have been with him in the pros.
No, you're right. LSU.
Yeah,
it
would have had to be LSU. So it has been a while. We're getting a lot of good comments in on that. Saban last night led to Jimbo this morning. Also last night, it was the Dallas Mavericks and the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. And the Mavs, Trey, they did what they do. They put up 40 or so threes. They actually put up 48 of them. But they only hit 11. 23% from beyond the arc. Little run in the third quarter by Golden State gave them a comfortable enough lead, and they held on to it. In a comfortable way. I don't want to say held on like it was really close. 112-87 was the final. Steph Curry led the way. He only needed 21. They spread it out pretty well and took game one from the Mavs. Wasn't much to it, honestly.
Yeah, this game, unfortunately for Dallas, wasn't all that close from the get-go. Golden State has a 10-point lead after the first quarter. Dallas shaves a point off of that heading into halftime, but much like we've seen all playoffs, Chad, that third quarter turns detrimental for one team or the other. I have a question for Zay. Zay, based on Spencer Dinwiddie being as good as he was the last couple of games of that Phoenix series, I expected to see him a little bit more in the first half versus what we did. They finally gave him some PT in the third quarter, and he started hitting shots, but that was way too late at that point because they were down by, I want to say, 20 points once he started to get things going.
Yeah, and I think you're going to have to go small with him playing and maybe Luka at the five defensively. You might not want that ideally because Draymond is so aggressive with his dribble handoffs and setting screens for Steph and Klay, but you might just have to match up with the Warriors' depth lineup, having Dinwiddie out there with Bullock, Finney-Smith, Brunson, and Luka. That's a small team and not a traditionally, you know, NBA lineup, but this is the playoffs. It's all about matchups, and it's all about finding an advantage. And if that is one, then I think Jason Kidd and the Mavs need to take a look at that.
So, Zay, the Warriors at one point in the game were shooting 81% from two-point range. They shot 56% from the floor. What was the most impressive thing to you about the Warriors last night?
Well, just because Andrew Wiggins and Jordan Poole, they cause so many different matchup problems when you're focusing on Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. The Mavericks put their best defenders, Finney-Smith and Bullock, on Steph and Klay, but that leaves Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins to really go off on guys like Jalen Brunson and Luka, who they're not bad defenders, but they're not going to exert a lot of energy defensively like Finney-Smith or Bullock will. So I thought that Poole and Wiggins really took advantage of their matchups. And Draymond, he's just so aggressive with the basketball. Even when he's not scoring, he's just setting really tough screens. He's pushing the ball up the court. And when you got a five-man basically doing that at your center, that's hard to guard. So, you know, the missed threes for the Mavs, 22%. I don't think they're going to shoot like that again.
Right.
I think they got really good shots this last game from three. And I think when just coming off of that really heated battle with the Suns, going to a game seven against the best team record-wise in the league, I think that took a lot out of them, and you saw it game one.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I thought Golden State would win game one, kind of that fatigue factor, and maybe the Mavs, and they did look a little tired, Trey. People talked about Luka looking a little slower than even normal. They like to run a slow pace, but just looked a little sluggish last night. The whole team just kind of dragged itself through the game. And the other thing as a Mavs fan that concerns me about this, Curry and Thompson a long way from going off in that game. Curry had a couple little spurts where he was Steph Curry, but they didn't really have great games, and they still whipped the Mavs. So that's a little concerning to me. It's just as simple as I think Charles Barkley's got this series nailed. He sounds like he's just being simplistic, but it's about the ball going in the basket. If the Mavs hit more shots, they'll have a chance. If they don't, they won't. They were minus 16 on the boards and minus 12 in points in the paint. You know I watch those numbers, not because I think the Mavs need to win them. The Mavs need that in single digits. If the Mavs get beat by double digits in both those categories, I think they're going to get beat in every game like that. They've got to tighten that up a little bit.
Agreed. Let's keep in mind that Golden State has been a bit of a roller coaster ride in these playoffs. They've been very up and down. They obviously got blown out in that Memphis series, even without Ja Morant on the floor for the Grizzlies. And the Mavs have been very resilient. They have not let getting blown out go to their heads. As a matter of fact, you know, you could argue that maybe they needed to try and take one here in Golden State. That's not necessary. Based on the last round, where they dropped the first two in Phoenix and got hammered both times, and really did bounce back and winning the next two in Dallas and going on to win two of the next three, including that last one in Phoenix. So no reason to panic right now if you're a Mavs fan, but you do want to see more of those secondary guys hitting their shots. I mean, even Jalen Brunson, who's the arguably the most important or the second most important guy on the roster after Luka Doncic. He was 0-for-5 from three-point range. He just has to be better.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they've got to play better all the way around. Game two of that series will be tomorrow night. Tonight is Eastern Conference Finals game two as well. So we'll definitely talk some hoops today. Let us know what you thought. 337-3776. Mavs fans, do you have any confidence coming out of it that your team can bounce back? You've certainly seen them do it in these playoffs. So we certainly have talked about the Saban and Jimbo part of college football today. We also wanted to get a couple things out there in terms of new rules in college football, because this is the story we've been looking for, and we were looking forward to talking about it today. It'll be a little less maybe than we planned on, but Trey, I do think it's important to point both of them out. Number one, they did pass real easily. They passed this idea that championship games are about to change if the conference wants it to. So FBS conferences now have the option of, if you want to have divisions for your conference championship game, go right ahead, but you do not have to. You can determine how your conference championship game is put together and constructed. It's all up to the conference.
So based on how we've seen conferences react to this news, the ACC, the first to float a plan, that 3-5-5 plan, in the Pac-12, gosh, was it even minutes after this announcement was made that they said, oh, we're scrapping the division format for 22, we're going to take the two best teams and put them in that championship game. It's clear to me this was one of, if not the biggest sticking point with regards to the Alliance voting against college football playoff expansion. They were worried that the SEC, which has always been extremely savvy with regards to how it schedules things, were going to get super creative to make sure even more of its teams find their way into that expanded college football playoff. Now, did the Alliance cut off their nose to spite their face? Absolutely. This is a conversation that has obviously been had because the rule has been changed now. Did you really need to say, nope, we're not going to do this until after 2025? No. I mean, we could have the 14 playoff for the next season or two, but give a chance to change that rule so maybe you can reconsider. Because even without the rule change, both those conferences still benefit. Or all three of those conferences still benefit from an expanded playoff.
Yep.
You may actually get a team in at most years.
Yeah,
Pac-12?
With the Pac-12, what they're going to do now is take the two best winning percentages, put them together. So let's say if Oregon and Stanford ended up being their two best, then they could take those two teams that were in the North, put them together, let them play. But that results in one team, Trey, that'll be up for the 14 playoff. That's what they're trying to get. They're trying to set up a better team. So if that's what your conference is, I think this is a good move for the Pac-12.
I am hoping and praying that the Pac-12 this next year has that one obvious team in the college football playoff. Let's say they're undefeated or one loss team. They're at 3 or 4. And had things been set up normally, they would have been facing a 9-3 team in the other division. But they go up against a 2-loss team, end up losing that game, and all of a sudden they find themselves on the outside looking in of that playoff because they thought it would be a good idea not to expand the playoff versus making sure both those teams probably get in, Chad.
Exactly, yeah, and especially your scenario will play out, especially if that other team, the second team in that game, is not obviously in. If
right.
They have already lost a game or two. So the interesting thing to look at, if you're a Texas fan listening to this, an Oklahoma fan, an A&M fan or whatever, what will the SEC do? Greg Sankey has said they're having conversations about what happens when Texas and Oklahoma come in. They're looking at different things, and they are looking at an option where they wouldn't have divisions. I'm going to guess the SEC stays right where they are
mm-hmm.
because every single year they are looking at two teams – that in fact, the SEC is going to be an interesting one to look at because if you assume the Alabama-Georgia sort of model of things, well, that's been an East-West. So do you really want to put those two teams together every time? If I was the SEC, I'd stay put. I'd stay with East-West. And then if you end up with certain years where you might end up with let's say it's a two-loss Florida as an example. Georgia slips a little bit, and it's a two-loss Florida. You know they can't get in the playoff, but you're going to have them play against there's Bama's badass in the West, let's say, and they're undefeated. That's who you'd want to play versus if you had somebody in the West, an A&M or an LSU that only had one loss. I don't know if I'd want those two teams playing each other because, like you're saying, if that secondary team beats the first one, it's not as good. What the SEC does off of this will be interesting. ACC may go to no divisions. Pac-12's already there. What should the SEC do? That's what I'm trying to figure out right now. I'm thinking maybe standing pat is best for them.
Yeah, but you aren't going to be able to play every team in your division unless you are going to minimize how many teams you're playing in that other division. With 16 total teams being in that conference now, I think they are going to have to switch to the pod format and just take the two best teams at the end of the year. And there's probably going to have to be tiebreakers. In some seasons, you may go through several levels of the tiebreaker to figure out who that second team is.
And ultimately, that could end up being better for other conferences. If the SEC decides, if we have two badasses, we'll have them play every year, well, then statistically speaking, a lot of times one of them will be kicked out of the playoff, and that's better for other conferences.
Sometimes, but let's also think about this, though. What happened with Georgia-Alabama a few years back?
Right.
Where Georgia wins the championship game, both teams make it in,
yep.
And then Alabama pays them back in the championship.
Yeah, and that's ultimately probably what the SEC would tell us. It's like, come on, man, look at the system the way it is. We've been getting two in every year.
Right.
Just keep it the same way. So that rule is out there. There's also a rule about recruiting that is going to change. We'll get into that as the show goes on. In fact, in our Flex 30 segment today at 1:30, we're going to dig into the high school side of NIL and recruiting because there's a big change coming the next 2 years. That will definitely affect the high school kids in this area and around the country. We'll get into all of that coming up at 105. Scipio Tech himself, Paul Wadlington, Inside Texas on 3.com. His thoughts on Saban and Jimbo and some of these new rules in college football. Up next, though, we'll jump into the crap bag. We haven't had a Deshaun Watson update in a while. People are wondering how long a suspension. Will there be a suspension? I give you the latest on what just came out from one of these legal situations that he is dealing with. Not criminal stuff, but remember those lawsuits are still out there. Get you an update coming up on the Horn.
Shirts and skins.
Uh-oh. What are we going here? You lifting me. We are getting perky on a Thursday.
I've definitely heard this song before. I don't know who the artist is.
All right. I think I know that voice. I'm going to try the band first. Fleetwood Mac?
Nope.
Is that Christy McVie?
Yes.
Okay.
Well done.
So I didn't know
very
which,
well done.
Which it was. This is... Okay, I didn't realize this was a solo song for her, but Christy McVie of Fleetwood Mac as a solo artist here.
So she's all the right. Number three in Fleetwood Mac after Stevie and Mick.
Yes, correct. No, after Lindsey and Stevie in terms of the singers.
Lindsey and Stevie, yes.
Because Mick Fleetwood's a drummer. As much as I love drums,
she's number four then.
technically, yeah, if you want to say she's four, Mick Fleetwood would love you saying that. So, yes, she's four.
You know, the backbone of the band deserves a little bit more respect.
And my wife would enjoy that, too, because she's not the biggest Christy McVie fan. She definitely is all about Stevie and a little Lindsay, but not as much into Christy McVie. All right, so the New Radicals and Christine McVie as a solo artist starting us off today. Great to have Zay with us today. Great to have you with us on a SEC Salacious Thursday, Soap Opera Thursday. Nick Saban mouths off last night about Jimbo. Jimbo wasn't going to let that just go down with a media release or anything. He calls a press conference of his own, references Saban as God, and says, y'all go dig into what God's been doing. You're going to find out the truth. And off we go into SEC craziness. We haven't even gotten to media days. We're not even to the summer yet.
It's not quite the NFL, but college football is the gift that keeps on giving during the offseason.
It is unbelievable, man. Just incredible. All right, real quick, a couple things before we get to the crap bag. PGA is going on, and Rory is at the top of the leaderboard, minus 5 through 15. Tiger at plus 2, Spieth at plus 3. They have not had as good of rounds today, but congrats to Rory. Also, for like a hole and a half, Trey, John Daly led the tournament. I just want to point that out.
That's cool.
He shot plus 2. He shot 72, but just for a second, he was leading the tournament earlier. I loved that.
I feel like John Daly should lose a stroke for every heater he burns on the course.
How dare you? No, strokes should come off.
That's what I'm saying. He loses a stroke.
Oh, loses a stroke in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. Matt Kuchar and Will Zalatoris are right there at minus 3 behind Rory. Also, we remind you to check out flexatx.com, flexatx.com. If you missed that interview with Keaton Kubeka of Westlake last night, we'll get into some more of that at 1:30. We want to talk about some of this NIL stuff and how it could affect high school kids. Also, remember to go to hornfm.com. You can find the full schedule there. And at flexatx.com of the 7-on-7 event. I heard Aaron Hogan this morning say he's headed out to 7-on-7 at Lake Travis on Saturday morning. I think Rod Babers may head out there. I'm going to go check out my first 7-on-7 event as well. So all four of our daily shows will be represented, because I know Snoop Daniel's going to be out there representing Light the Tower and Flex. So looking forward to checking that out, some of the big talent in the area with 7-on-7. All trying to get to College Station, Trey. This is the only event that happens every year where everyone's trying to get to College Station.
I will let you guys know if any high-profile high school athletes show up at the swimming pool at Hyatt Lost Pines on Saturday.
Yes, please do. Let us know if anybody's in the Lazy River.
The Lazy River.
Yes.
There's a slide there that's mostly kids. If one of those high schoolers goes down the slide, I'll be sure to report it first.
All right. Let's get you into the crap bag today. I'm going to get you an update on Deshaun Watson. Here we go.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. No criminal charges, of course, for Deshaun Watson, but he is still dealing with these civil cases, 22 different women in the civil lawsuits that are filed. Well, Trey, here's the extra info we have now. According to a partial transcript obtained by the paper, and by the paper, I mean the New York Post. Let's just make sure we're all clear on which paper we're talking about here. Watson said that he reached out to one of the massage therapists after her reaction, but claimed he did not know why she cried. He reached out via text to apologize. The text read, quote, "Sorry about you feeling uncomfortable. Never were the intentions. Let me know if you want to work in the future. My apologies."
Never were the intentions is an interesting set of words.
And then he claims to the lawyer for this woman that he does not know why she was crying or her eyes were watery, however it was described.
Then what were the intentions that he was referencing?
Right. Exactly. That's the perfect follow-up. And he's going to have to maybe explain that a little bit. Would the NFL ask him a question that specific? I'm not sure. What I do know is this is the first woman that accused him, Trey, and she says this happened in March of 2020. He is accused by these 22 women all the way through March of 21. So if in March of 20, your massage therapist was crying at the end of the massage, aren't you going to make sure that for the next year, if you get a massage, that they're not crying at the end? If you are above board and I'm to believe you that you've never treated a woman badly or you've never treated a massage therapist badly, don't you make sure they don't cry, Trey? Shouldn't that be like number one thing on your mind?
I've received I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 massages in my life, Chad. You know what's never happened to me at the end of a massage?
Crying?
The masseuse crying. For whatever reason. Thankfully,
yeah,
a family member hasn't passed away that she's just found out about, but certainly not because of something that I've done that has been taken the wrong way.
Really weird. That's just a strange story. Yeah, again, sent the text after she cried when their session ended. Yeah, in any situation, a medical situation, I'm at the doctor, I'm at the dentist, I picked up my car today at a dealership. Any of those situations, if the person helping me is crying at the end, I might be enough of a human to go, hey, are you okay? Is it all right? And then, like you said, I could get the response of, yeah, somebody in my family just died. My dog is having surgery today. I got an allergy attack, something. But Deshaun Watson, maybe handling that a little bit differently. So this is, again, the deposition last week was on behalf of Ashley Solis. She was the first woman to file a lawsuit against Watson last year. And remember, this week is when the NFL is meeting with Watson somewhere in the state of Texas to discuss all of these things. So it might be interesting if we find out what kind of questions they would ask and what answers he might give. A lot of folks thinking it's going to be at least that 6-game suspension we've seen for others for Deshaun Watson. There's your crap bag update for the day. We do it at 12:45 every day. The stuff rolling around in my head. Up next, we'll find out what's rolling around in Paul's head. That's Paul Wadlington, Scipio Tex of Inside Texas and On3.com. Saban and Jimbo and some new rules in college football. Up next on the Horn.